Our final talk of the afternoon is by Gordon Holtgreave, a research associate here at the School of Aquatic and Fisheries Sciences. He'll talk to us on linking species to ecosystems, effects of spawning salmon on aquatic ecosystem function. Gordon?
Great. Thanks very much. Thanks for sticking it out to the bitter end here. Get my pointer together. So, salmon are a really important species to us here in the Pacific Northwest. In a lot of ways, we kind of identify ourselves as Northwesterners around salmon. It's something we cherish. And this dates back for millennia. Native American cultures have long appreciated salmon and the resources they provide. Current art depicts our fun and enjoyment of salmon. Literature, also, for example. I mean, we're really tied to this one organism and these species. Salmon are important for other reasons. They're darn tasty on a piece of rice with a tad bit of wasabi. Because they are so good to eat, that makes them a very valuable species in the area. There's large and important commercial fisheries for salmon. There's also very large and economically important recreational fisheries for salmon as well. Now, ecologists are also really interested in salmon for some different reasons. Salmon are this really striking example of biological resource subsidies and mechanisms by which different distinct habitats are connected. So, as has been mentioned, salmon are anadromous and somniparous, and they spawn in fresh waters and streams, lakes, and rivers, and then migrate out to the ocean where they accumulate 99% of their biomass. And after some number of years, they return back to these natal freshwater systems to spawn and eventually die. And when they do that, they transfer a large quantity of nutrients upstream, and nutrients that can be potentially be important to inland ecosystems. These are nitrogen, phosphorus, carbon. And so this has stimulated a lot of research on kind of these effects of spawning salmon in natal streams. And this example, you know, this migration of salmon is really cool and has gathered a lot of attention because it kind of flips on its head how we normally think about the way nutrients move in watersheds. So normally we view that the nutrients are generated in the terrestrial ecosystem, they migrate downstream, following flow paths into streams and then off out into the ocean. And salmon really flipped that on its head. They move nutrients upstream, and if the proper mechanisms were around, these nutrients can move out into the terrestrial environment. Now, what's important to realize is salmon are a commercially exploited species, and for that and a number of other reasons, they have some troubles in a large part of their range. This is a map showing listings of evolutionary significant units of salmon along the West Coast and the lower 48. And the point here is that there are a lot of parts of the range where salmon are in some serious trouble. And because of this, there's a want and a desire to come up with some management actions to try to help deal with this problem. And one of these management actions is trying to find ways to replace this ecological function of salmon through carcass addition. So this is trying to replace these missing nutrients by bombing large quantities of salmon out of helicopters into watersheds. And, you know, in an effort to replace some of these missing nutrients where runs are depleted. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is, well, first I want to give you this background on salmon and marine derived nutrients, so we can cross that off the list. But I'm going to talk to you about some studies I've done looking at how salmon impact ecosystem processes, and particularly look at this idea of marine-derived nutrients, bioturbation, and then link this into aquatic ecosystem metabolism. And then after doing that, I'm going to give you some conclusions and implications of this work. So to do this kind of work, you've got to go someplace where you have salmon, and I work in the same system that NELA does. So this is the Bristol Bay region of southwestern Alaska. Specifically, I work in the Wood River system. So this is one of those five fishing districts that NELA mentioned here. And what's nice is there's a lot of fish up there. The average annual escapement to the Wood River system is about 1.2 million fish. As Neela mentioned, there's been a long history of exploitation on this fishery. This is an image from near Dillingham at 1900, in kind of the beginning of the fishing era. And this fishing has occurred pretty much steadily through since that time. And what we found is that it's actually a largely sustainable fishery. In fact, the most recent catches are as large or larger than they've been in the entire history of the fishery. And part of the reason for that is it's got a lot of high-quality intact habitat in the area. So this is an example of a salmon stream up there, and it's a really good place to, if you want to go figure out what salmon do to stream ecosystems, this is a good place to do it. Lots of fish, really good, high-quality habitat. Okay, so I'm going to run through a couple of models, some ideas of how ways to think about how salmon might affect streams. So the first one I'm going to describe here is what I'm calling this traditional model. Here, and here, salmon provide nutrients to an ecosystem, a stream, for example. This stimulates algae growth, which then stimulates, say, macroinvertebrates and fishes. And so you see this kind of progression of these nutrients up the food web. If you were to think in terms of ecosystem metabolism, so rates of photosynthesis or respiration, which is really an integrator across these whole all these processes here, what you might expect is an increase in photosynthesis because of this nutrient stimulation of algae. You might also expect a little increase in respiration because you're just kind of magnifying the overall food web. Now, that works well within the context of this marine-derived nutrients, but we also need to recognize that salmon are really strong ecosystem engineers. And what I mean by ecosystem engineers is that they get into a stream and they have to dig their nest. So this is a salmon red here, and what you notice is all this sediment material behind these salmon reds, and this is stuff that's been dislodged and mobilized by salmon digging their nests. So they go in here, and you can see this much of this stream bed has been disturbed by salmon digging. So this is really important and becoming more recognized effect of salmon. So we can maybe add another model that kind of recognizes this. So salmon do provide those nutrients to ecosystems, but there's this very strong negative effect on algae simply by this turning over of rocks, these digging of nests. So there's negative impacts on up the food web because of that. Here you might expect photosynthesis to go down because the algae is getting impacted, and then respiration to go down because of just overall negative effects on the food web. But lastly, I want to add in a third model. I'm going to call this one the integrated metabolism model. So on this side, we have essentially the same thing over here. Nutrients, negative effect on algae. However, we're going to recognize here that salmon provide a very large amount of organic matter. And this is potentially important to heterotrophs existing in the stream. And this could provide an alternate pathway to bring some of this energy into this ecosystem. And here we might expect photosynthesis to go down because of the negative effect on algae, but respiration increase because of this heterotrophic loop. So as part of my dissertation work, I set out to look at this. The stream that I'm going to talk about that we did most of this work is Pitt Creek. It's a pretty typical salmon stream, a couple kilometers in length, fairly wide. It's about a third order stream. And it gets greater than 10,000 salmon on average every year. So just some basic information. So here's total phosphorus in Pitt Creek. This is weeks after June 1. So this is the majority of the salmon spawning time in this stream. What you can see here, and this is an average of, let's see, so it looks like we've got 5 years of data here. So this is averages across those years. You see this kind of peak in the total phosphorus concentration. And that corresponds pretty well with the live salmon abundance in that stream. We could plot a similar figure for total nitrogen. So clearly salmon are bringing nutrients into this system. This figure is delta N15. So salmon are enriched in N15 because of their high trophic position in the ocean. And because of that, you can use it to track nutrients, right? And so here what you're seeing is this increase in N15 through time that's coincidence with this salmon arrival. So salmon come and the N15 bumps up. This just tells you that the nutrients from salmon are getting in to the periphyton in this case. So this is biofilm on the bottom of the stream. And then lastly, here's chlorophyll A. So this is the amount of algae biomass in the stream through time. And what you can see here is there's this really sharp decline during this time of spawning in the stream. So those are all good pieces of information, but really what we want to know is what are the rates of photosynthesis and respiration? What are these really critical ecosystem functions? So the way you do that is you monitor changes in oxygen. So go back to high school biology. Photosynthesis produces oxygen. Respiration consumes oxygen. Pretty basic. So what we can do is look at diurnal swings of oxygen from day to night. So, for example, here's Pitt Creek during the day. You've got photosynthesis occurring because of the light and respiration occurring at the same time. Here's Pitt Creek at night. You don't have the photosynthesis component anymore because there's no sunlight, so all you have is respiration, and you can use this switching of the light environment to try to tease apart these two processes. So this figure's going to take a bit of a second to load here. Okay, so here's dissolved oxygen expressed as percent saturation through this season. This is 2008 here, and what you're looking at are these diurnal swings. These are these day-night swings in oxygen. Here's the saturation level. So what you're seeing during the day out here, you have supersaturated conditions, a lot more oxygen than you would expect. This is photosynthetic oxygen. It's dipping below saturation at night. And then you see this strong dip here later in the season that strongly relates to the presence of salmon. So when salmon enter the system, you see everything is below saturation. And towards the end here, you see a real strong diminishment of the diurnal swings. Really good indication that salmon are really dramatically changing these metabolic processes. But to really get at the rates, we need to do some more detailed measurements. And those were done 10 times throughout the season, shown here. And I'll give you some examples of two of those. This is one of the in-depth diurnal experiments before salmon. Again, what you can see, strong diurnal cycling of oxygen going supersaturated during the day, undersaturated at night. Here's an example from after salmon, entirely supersaturated both day and night. And you also notice that the phase has shifted. So now at the time of day when the maximum occurs is the minimum here. So we've really reworked the way oxygen cycles in this system. Fortunately, I'm not going to be able to tell you much about this, but we developed a model to quantify, to use these diurnal curves to quantify those rates of ecosystem metabolism. Those are the fits to the model. If you have any questions, I'm happy to talk to you about it later. But I'll give you the take-home point. And so here's rates of gross primary production and ecosystem respiration before salmon. So roughly a net neutral system, roughly equivalent photosynthesis and respiration. Here we go after salmon. Gross primary productivity declines by almost an order of magnitude, while ecosystem respiration triples. Now, these are the data from the 10 detailed experiments that I mentioned to you. Here is respiration. Here's primary production. And that maps on pretty well with salmon. So salmon are really knocking down the amount of primary productivity in the system and increasing the amount of ecosystem respiration quite strongly. So kind of doing a little back-of-the-envelope calculation, you could probably ask yourself, well, great, you're jamming 10,000 salmon into a 2-kilometer-long stream. No doubt that the respiration rate's going to go up. So what I've done here is I've estimated the amount of oxygen consumption by salmon based on a bioenergetics model. So this is by live salmon. So this is just the amount of oxygen that salmon are consuming by sitting in the stream breathing. And this is the total ecosystem respiration that we observed. And there's two features here. One, that salmon metabolism, live salmon metabolism, cannot explain the full increase in ecosystem respiration. And it's skewed, this increase is skewed towards the front of the salmon run. And this has two important points. Now remember, when I said salmon are digging their nests, they're mobilizing all this sediment off the bottom of the stream, and they're providing nutrients. Now, there's a long history of literature showing that when you add nutrients to streams, you increase the rate of decomposition. And when you mobilize sediments, you also provide increase the surface area. So by moving these sediments and adding nutrients, it seems the salmon are fueling heterotrophic respiration in this ecosystem. And now also remember, there's a very long history in the literature about streams being supported by alloctonous organic matter. Most of the energy that supports food webs in streams comes from the terrestrial environment. So we should expect that these microbial processes are really important in streams. So if we go back to our three models here, We can pretty much toss this one out right away. We do not see an increase in primary productivity. It goes down by an order of magnitude. We might expect this one to still be true if we modify it to say, well, there's a lot of salmon. Maybe respiration goes up simply by the fact that we got a lot of fish there. That could be the case, but I think we've disproven that, at least in this situation, to say that respiration goes up far more than salmon can explain. So we're left to suggest that this model best explains what we see in Pitt Creek, that really what we're seeing is this kind of fueling of this heterotrophic loop in the ecosystem. So just to kind of wrap up here, I'll give a couple of concluding statements. So primary productivity goes down, ecosystem respiration goes up with salmon. Salmon seem to stimulate heterotrophic respiration. And I'll throw this one out there as kind of bait for questions later and suggest that, although I haven't had a chance to show you these data specifically, we did look and see if these nutrients kind of hung around in the stream later, so after the salmon run was done, that maybe there was a kind of delayed effect, and we found that not to be the case. I'd like to thank a number of people that helped along the way. Daniel Schindler was my advisor in the School of Aquatic and Fisheries Sciences. He helped through all of this, and a bunch of other people helped with modeling and fieldwork. And thank these funders, and I specifically want to acknowledge the Alaska Salmon Program, who I worked with in Alaska. If I have time for questions, I'll take them. Thanks. Yeah, Ray.
Did you look at how
Yes, that's a really good question. So the question was, have I looked at how ecosystem metabolism is related to hours of sunlight? So yes, during the season, sunlight is dramatically changing through time. You're getting much shorter days and longer nights. I didn't show the data here because I would have had to explain my model quite intensively. But in that model, the reason we developed that model was to develop metrics of photosynthesis and respiration that were independent of temperature and light. And so what I quantified was the photosynthesis irradiance curve and the slope of the photosynthesis irradiance relationship. So that is the amount of photosynthesis per unit light. And that follows the GPP patterns I showed you exactly. So amount of photosynthesis per unit light goes down by basically the same amount. And the respiration quantified for temperature goes up about the same. Yeah, Bob.
So how much of these fish get taken out of the stream by bears, and the bears create a big disturbance factor, just like the fish do with the reds by jumping and splashing around?
Yeah, so I don't know if anybody has looked at the bear effect in streams specifically. So bears can, on any given stream, wipe out anywhere from 5% to 100% in a day sometimes. They can go in and just decimate salmon populations. And that is one important, a very important vector to get those nutrients out and into the terrestrial environment. I'm sure that the disturbance effect from bears could have similar effects in there. It could change the effect on the metabolism by killing the fish off before they have a chance to dig their nests. I don't have any data to speak to that one way or the other. But yeah, it potentially could be a...
Something to add to your model.
Yeah, we can just take it all the way down the side, yeah. I saw a hand back there.
Have you encountered or has your model been able to calculate a negative feedback of respiration seen in the ultimate body for fish? In other words, it would be caused increased water mortality as a result of huge respiration, as a result of high numbers of fish, so you have this negative feedback. Have you seen that, or do you...
So there's some examples. So the question is there a negative feedback on the high numbers of fish increasing respiration, and that's going to consume oxygen and potentially be a negative impact on the fish? I did examine that. There's an example up in the Bristol Bay region of some very low oxygen conditions in the Alagnac River and some high spawning mortality that has, one of the hypotheses is for low oxygen. So we actually did evaluate that. An interesting effect of salmon, because when they're in the stream, they're in there thrashing around, fighting, digging their nests. They roughen the surface of the water, and that increases the gas exchange rate between the atmosphere and the water. And so that helps to alleviate the problem by basically re-aerating the stream through this disturbance mechanism there. So that's they're helping to offset this oxygen consumption problem by ruffling the surface. So I tested it with my model where I removed that effect of the salmon and asked, well, if they weren't disturbing the surface, what would happen to the oxygen? It would get down to about 5 mg/L, which is right about where they're starting to get in trouble. So yeah, it seems to be important. That's it. Thank you.